You're listening to CivCast on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. Support us on Patreon at patreon.com/CivCast. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of CivCast. My name is Kyle, and I'm joined here by my co-host, as always, Dan. Hello, Dan.
Greetings, party people.
Greetings to all the party people out there. Hi, Resender in the chat. Hello, everybody joining us live over on YouTube, Twitch, and Mixer. We appreciate you guys coming to hang out here. We are one member short this week as Valter is out and about. He said he's getting back a little bit later today, so unfortunately unable to make this week's episode. And that changed our plans around a little bit. We're going to do a deeper dive of Nubia originally. That's what we talked about at the end of last week's episode, but that's totally okay. We didn't get as much time in there as we liked. So next week, we're going to come back to you with more details on that. And I was thinking we could do a little bit of a deeper dive on what sort of changes in last week's patch notes impacted us the most. So if you guys want to share that, feel free to submit your thoughts on that. We can cover all of that next week. If you saw some sort of change from that big summer patch that has really stood out to you, something that maybe arguably has broken your gameplay or has given you a whole new avenue of gameplay, let us know. And huge shout out to everyone that's been active over on the subreddit of ours, which is just CivCast. You can get to it, civcast.reddit.com. People have been sharing a lot of information over there, commenting a lot on the previous episodes. And Dan, you read off a huge ton of responses from last week's CivCast challenge. That was July's. What'd you think of that, the turnout?
Well, I think it was great. And that, I mean, look, we say it all the time, but that's the point of doing it, right? Is it's being done in order to get you guys interacting with different scenarios, different styles, different approaches to the game than those that you might normally take, because it is a video game. And although, you know, you want to win, the name of the game is fun. So the point of it is to try like new things and plug yourself into exciting new scenarios or whatever other cheesy tagline I can come up with. So this week's, which we're going to talk about, is kind of along those lines too. It's a little bit more streamlined, a little bit more normal, but with a bit of a unique flavor to it.
Yeah, I would totally agree. And so we came up with this one at the end of last week. And Dan, I'll obviously toss this to you in a second here to do a full run through if you'd like. But we were thinking back and forth, and I forget who gets the credit for this. Was this Valter's idea? Is he the one that came up with this one?
I mean, I think it was my idea.
Oh, it was yours. Okay.
You can credit Valter.
No. Credit where credit's due. This was your idea then. I just couldn't remember. Valter came up with the one before then. Something like that.
Yeah.
But well, then why don't you take it away? Tell us all about this one. What are we doing and who are we playing?
Cool. So as we talked about at length last week in challenge, or pardon me, in the show proper, there were a lot of changes to the naval aspect, and specifically to some of the more naval-focused civs with this most recent patch. And that's exciting for many different reasons. It's particularly exciting to us because I know Kyle and I are both big fans of naval play. And like last night, I actually just went and watched the movie Dunkirk, which is all about naval warfare, yeah. Which was really good, by the way, and which kind of got me even more jazzed up for this. But yeah, you know, we thought that we would try a CivCast challenge that would kind of force you guys into taking a more direct approach to Navy and to water combat and to water focus than perhaps in the past when we have... when we've tried to diversify, and understandably, you know, if you're going to be playing a civ like, Scythia, you're not going to be, you know, doubling down on your Navy. That's not going to be your first choice. So we kind of figured that what we would do is we'd set up a challenge where we had six of the most naval-focused civs in the game. And we would get you to choose your civ from that pool and then set up the five opposing civs as the five of those remaining six. I hope that makes sense. I feel like I'm twisting my tongue here, but nonetheless. So this is going to be the CivCast Naval Challenge. And what we are going to do is ask you to pick from one of the following six civs. Those six are Australia, Brazil, Japan, Norway, England and Spain. So no Nubia in there. We're going to give you some time to actually get used to them before you do them in a challenge. But these six sieves, after we had some discussion together, are the sieves that are most focused on naval combat and most oriented towards the sea. You know, whether it's Australia and their bonuses for being coastal, you know, Japan and their the bonuses for their military for being coastal, whatever it is, or someone like Spain with treasure fleets, whatever it is, you know, this should draw you towards the sea. Another way that we're going to try and draw you towards that naval combat as best as possible is with the map. And we are going to do one that I always try and kind of stray away from, because I feel like it tends to like promote isolationist games, and that's the island plates map. So, you know, in the past, in particular, I remember with Civ 5, the way that the AI was set up, maybe deprioritizing naval combat. I felt like any time I played Islands, it just ended up being a really boring game. it's just straight up. So I am curious to see if that has changed for Civ 6, and if this new kind of island setup and the reworking of the AI here, these most recent buffs to naval combat and to the sea in general, is going to change that. So we're going to encourage you to do island plates map for this. The map size is going to be the normal small, sorry, it's called small, the six person map size. And your speed and your start age are going to be normal, so no more crazy Renaissance era starting, don't worry. Although we might come back to that in the future, because people did seem to like it.
Yeah, like it shook up their game.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of our victory type, as I was saying before, islands and maybe a focus on naval combat, you know, could scare people off from really kind of going out and about and exploring, because there's a lot of unknown and there's a lot less of a safety blanket when you're playing a naval focus game. So we've decided to take away science and culture as victory types, because those are the ones that are the most isolationist. And so what it's going to be is your victory type for this is going to have to be either religious or domination, which are the two victory types that encourage you to go out and forward and actually you know, utilize what we're hoping is going to be a really strong navy that you're going to have. So whether it's, you know, you're going to conquer the high seas, like, I don't know, the Iron Islanders in Game of Thrones, or you're going to go out there and try and proselytize to everyone with your sea-based religion. Maybe you'll have, I don't know, Krakenism or something like that. Whatever it is, whatever it is between religious and domination, those are going to be your two victory types. So that should be pretty pretty exciting. I think that that's going to really encourage people to be out and about and active on the map, as opposed to just sealing themselves off in their two or three you know, nearest islands and just winning that way, which is totally viable and which I've done plenty of times in the past, but it's not really what we want in this one. So everything else is standard: resources, speed. Difficulty is still going to be Emperor. And the dates that we're running this are from today to August the 27th.
Oh, you know what, Dan? You had it right. I had it wrong. It's the 26th, because we do the last Saturday of the month. So August 6th to the 26th. I edited and made a mistake.
Well, it's all good. So the 26th then, yeah. So you get 3 weeks to do it. Hopefully 3 weeks is enough. Hopefully you don't mind that we're not having you play Nubia. I know that a lot of you are excited to try the new Civ, but we'll probably have a CCC for them next month, and if not next month, in the following, because we are going to be rolling out at least one more Civ within the next couple of months, if you remember, according to Firaxis. So the hope here is that you hit the high seas, and whether it's, you know, through a trade-based, you know, war by sheer numbers with someone like Spain, or whether it's just, you know, a strictly military domination, beat them up and steal their cities play with someone like Norway. We hope you have fun with it.
Absolutely. And a huge thanks to everyone that's kind of piping in with different ideas for upcoming CivCast challenges. I wanted to call out one that I thought was, I think this was the one I want to call out here. Dash Rip commented on one of our posts and said something I thought when you guys were talking about the restart button: a CivCast challenge where everyone has to use the same map seed. That would be a really cool way. He commented and said it would be interesting to see how different players spread out and, just do their unique play styles. I think that would be a good one. It would be an easy one. It would be one for us where we just randomly generate a map. It doesn't matter what we start with. We just take that seed, post it for people on the subreddit post, and you guys would have to start with that one. It would be a really cool thing to do. So maybe we can incorporate that with a Nubia one next month, because Nubia is a really cool civ. But to Dan's point, we kind of want to give you time to figure out how they work in your rotation. Like, what do you like to do with them? How do you press your forces? Be the best Nubia player you can be by the time we do that challenge. And also, if anyone's holding out from buying it, we want to give you guys time to kind of look at the reviews of it, see what people are really saying after they've had about a month with it, and not force you guys to get it just to compete in the challenge. Although, from my previous week playing Nubia, I have to say I really am a fan. So I think this was a civ done well, but that's my take on it. I'm an archer guy, and so is a Manator. By the way, on the name, a Manator, I find it interesting that the intro video that they gave us, the little preview clip, and Sean Bean both pronounced the names differently. So take that, pronunciation police.
I wonder if like they keep just having to fly Sean Bean into Firaxis headquarters to record all these voiceovers for these new civs and stuff, or if they had them all in the pipe before and just had them all recorded before they even released the game and then are just waiting to kind of, distribute them piecemeal.
I would guess that that's an interesting one, because I was thinking the same thing. Like, are they having Sean do these? I mean, they don't have to technically probably fly him in. I'm assuming he probably has some sort of in-home recording setup for something like this, because a lot of professional recorders will just do it in like a closet space with some acoustic foam up, and it works well enough. But it is a question. I like your thing, Dan, where you said, did he do a lot of these in advance, or is he doing them now? I'm curious to know how far out Firaxis has pre-planned these leaders. Very interesting to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense that they would know exactly which ones pre-plan it out, at least for the ones pre-expansion pack. Because did they have different people doing the voiceovers in Civ 5, or was it the same person for all the way through the... Was it Leonard Nimoy all the way throughout?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. Yeah, so maybe they did have him like kind of fly in or do it from home or whatever. But nonetheless, I don't know. It's just curious what Ned Stark is doing for his recordings.
Exactly. Hey, I want to call out Resender in a Mixer chat had a question or a statement. He thinks it would be a bit cheaty if we did the same map seed. People just play once to know where the resources are and play again. Resender, that's actually totally legal within our rules. You can absolutely play more than once to do a CivCast challenge. We've had many people in the past try it out, come in really far behind their first playthrough, and then come back with a sweeping victory their second time. Most of the time, those people don't post. They won't do, if they know that they didn't do well, they won't post like a victory thing on Reddit. We suggest you don't. If you're going to do two or three shots of it in 1 month, we suggest you probably just only post the one, because we'll only really have time to recap one. And that would be a lot more work on your part. But you are always welcome to recompete in the CivCast challenge if you think you just got a really bad luck of the draw. I mean, it's something we can't police. That's why it's a rule that we support. We would never know if you made it so far and then just re-rolled anyway.
And our peeps are better than that, right?
Exactly. Honor code, honor policy. Well, and it's also not illegal. So so I guess they don't have to be better than that. They can just be that.
That's fair enough. It's all for fun, folks. If you want to do it that way, power to you. But let's try and keep it, an even playing field. Scout's honor, right?
Exactly. And also, Resender corrected us, Civ 4. I don't know if we said Civ 5 or something. I don't even remember who did this, the voiceovers in Civ 5. But yeah, Nimoy, I guess, was 4.
Nimoy was 4. Who's Civ 5? Why can't I remember this?
Civ? Pig Iron. I don't know who that guy was. I remember him, his voice, but I can't remember who that was. Civ 5 narrator? That person,
da.
William Morgan Shepherd.
Who?
I don't know who that is. I don't. William Morgan Shepherd. It says. I don't know if he did. He's the narrator. Wait, this is the father voice father/narrator voice in Civ 5. I don't know. Here, I don't think we'll get in trouble for playing any of these. Oh, maybe I will for that volume of Civ 5.
Scientific power has outrun our spiritual power. We have guided missiles and misguided men.
All quotes are voiced by British actor William Morgan Shepherd.
Okay, I mean, I guess. I seem to remember it being someone that I knew, and I don't know who William Morgan Shepherd is, but whatever. Those who cannot
remember the past. Let's see, what else did William Morgan Shepherd do? He's a British actor that... how do I stop this? Go away. Goodbye, William. Anything that we know? Let's see. I don't think I know these films or TV series. So this, oh, Mad Men, he was in there, I guess, for a minute, for one episode.
I guess.
Criminal Minds for one episode. I mean, Doctor Who for one episode. So, yeah, I don't know who you are, William Morgan Shepherd. But Civ 5 was a weird deal where they didn't even own the music to it. And they, you know, it, all across the board, it was a little obscure in that way. So thank you.
Sean Bean's better.
Yes, I do really like Sean Bean in this. Dan, do you want to talk a little bit about the book club and where we stand with that? What's happening? Because I know we're going to do, you guys were going to record an episode this week, but it's probably going to happen next week. So tell us where you stand.
Yeah, so we had a couple people mention and talking to us about the book club. So thank you to them for doing that. We hope that you enjoyed your read of Frank Bicotter's The Cultural Revolution this month. We were going to record our rundown on it for the $1 Patreon subscribers today. But as Wouter's out and about, we are going to do that instead next week. And next week, I will also be doling out what the book club book is for this month. Unless Kyle, you think it's a good idea to do it this week on the so that they have enough time to actually read it, because it is already the sixth of the month.
That's what I was just thinking. You know what? Let's make a post this week, Dan. You let me know. I mean, if you want to take up the job of doing the post, you just let me know the book. We'll get you the link and everything. I think you're right. I hope it's a smaller book, because you're right, they've already losing 6 days out of the month. Hopefully it's not. Well, you know what? Here, this is up to you, and this is up to the listeners out there, too. If it's a super long book, it could maybe be a bi-monthly club sort of deal, or even just like on occasion, it takes a month or two.
You know, man, I mean, I guess I could just change the book and do something that's a little shorter. I had a couple ideas. I had one that I was going to try and link up with my historical extra, so something Russian, but I also could do something in honor of Nubia, do something that's focused around Africa as well. It's an option.
Yeah, that's totally up to you. That's a good idea. I mean, this is your baby, so I leave it in your hands to whatever you think is best with the timeline. I'm happy to help you out however you need, but
it's my baby, so I will nurse it as I wish.
Exactly. Who am I to say what book to read? I don't know how to read. Anyway, that's why I do a podcast, because I don't know how to read. I'm just kidding. I can read these show notes, and they say that we should probably talk a little. Well, I'm going to do my brief Nubia recap, if that's okay with you, Dan. Gonna do that.
Always okay with me.
Let's flip this over for our live viewers. So here you go, guys. Here is the Civ Wikia, Civilization Wikia page for Nubia. I wanted to kind of recap some things that I noticed, because I was playing her and doing an actual science sort of victory type. I mean, that's the direction I was heading before I had to put it on pause. But things that really stood out to me. I like to build archers in the early game, and boy, is she a great facilitator of that. With their plus 50% production towards ranged units, I mean, that really helps a ton. Is this actually cutting off some of the text? One sec. Let's see if I can fix this a little. There we go. There we go. Okay. So anyway, plus 50% production towards ranged units. That's great. For me, I usually try to keep my empire safe in the early game with ranged units. I'm not usually an early game aggressor, so this really helped me shore up my defenses in the beginning, because I'm always aiming for archers, and with her special Patati archers, they are very cool with their 3 movement instead of 2. Man, that makes them a very, very powerful force. It creates some sort of real like synergy in your early empire, because you can spam these archers out quickly. They can travel fast. And what that means, I think, is that you can then you can really push your cities out without worrying about like your supply lines being broken in a way, because these guys can move so quickly and take down barbarians from afar that I got a bigger sense of security within my empire, and I just felt safer sending my settlers out further. They also get, your ranged units get plus 50% combat experience. So every time they're fighting, their promotions are a little bit quicker to gain. She has a bonus that we discussed last week in terms of mines. So whenever you put a mine over a strategic resource, you get plus one production, and mines over bonus and luxury resources provide plus two gold. I don't know if the gold really impacted me in any noticeable way in the last game, but I can say that that plus one extra production over mines with a strategic resource, that did seem to help me in a noticeable way. I noticed that coupled with her archer bonus, that things were popping out very quickly within the Empire. I could just produce a lot, because in the early game, plus one extra point of production can actually equate to a considerable amount, especially when you're like within your first two or three cities. That stuff really, really helps. And the one thing I did want to add, I think this is kind of my last note on it, and then Dan, I'm open to any maybe questions if you have any things like that, is I did not get a chance to build any of her Nubian pyramid. Wait. I got a chance to build a Nubian pyramid that underwhelmed me, but I was not able to build one next to my city center, so I did not get to play around with her the extra 20%. It's plus 20% production on all districts, rising to plus 40% if the city contains a Nubian pyramid next to the city center. So I didn't get to do that. Dan, is there anything you have for me or anything you're really looking forward to in playing Nubia and the Manator?
So is there anything about the Tati archers that is underpowered? Because I know I was reading their statistics and the production cost on them is up, but that I guess that's to prevent them from being insanely overpowered by her production cost towards ranged units bonus. And the fact that they gain plus 50% combat experience means that they are going to level up faster than, you know, any of your opposition's ranged units in all likelihood. Mm-hmm. So to me, they look pretty bulletproof. Is there anything about them that you found, particularly talking about Ta Seti, which is the Civ ability, which is a plus 50% production towards ranged units. All ranged units gain plus 50% combat experience. Mines over strategic resources provide plus one production, and mines over bonus and luxuries provide plus two gold. Combining that ability plus the Patati Archer, is there anything about it that you think is kind of like a negative or a detriment? Because it seems pretty soundly strong. I'm not going to say overpowered, but definitely strong to me.
Yeah, you know, I can't say I noticed any huge drawbacks with them. If anything, because, you know, it's one of those situations where you're going to be upgrading them soon, it made me a little bit sad, you know, when I had to make them into a crossbowman. But I will say that I don't think that there's any large drawback that I've encountered just yet. In fact, I think that they really helped my...
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, I think they helped my Eurekas because I was way more likely to spam these guys. So as you guys know, you get a bonus to... You get a Eureka bonus whenever you put out your first three archers. And then, you know, your machinery, I believe, gets a bonus to that. They get the Eureka so that you can build your crossbowmen, you know, a little faster. Research them faster, I should say. And in this case, I mean, I was running around with about six or so of these archers. On occasion, I mean, you have to keep in mind, they can be overwhelmed if you leave one of them in a weird spot. Like... They kind of function as scouts due to their long travel distance. I mean, the extra movement point really, really helps. And in that's how I kind of lost one or two, I think, is that I let them scout out far and kind of maybe put too much emphasis on them for their own good. And then a barbarian like horde, like two or three units, could overwhelm them and I would lose one. But overall, with your ability to pump these guys out so quickly and their movement and, you know, all of those bonuses, they actually seem like a really strong fighting force. If you were going to attack a city, probably want some sort of melee unit with them, though, just to discourage direct head-on collisions.
For sure. And when I think about it, it's situationally, if you're going up against a civ like, I don't know, Greece or the Romans, who are going to be, you know, when the Patati Archer is at its peak, the Greeks are going to be rolling out hoplites and you're going to be getting legions from the Romans. So those could definitely counter it. But I guess my next question is, There's, by my count, I think four unique archer units, unique units that are archers, might be the better way to put it, in the game right now. The Marianu Chariot Archer, the Sacco Horse Archer, the Immortal, which is obviously really kind of a controversial unit, and how would you rank those four? Best to worst.
Oh, okay. So hold on. I'm going to probably need this list again. So we got the Marianu Chariot Archer. That's one. So we got this guy, the Patati. Who are other two?
The Immortal, which is the Persian.
Wow. You know, I don't know if I've ever, I haven't done much with the Immortal, so I feel hard pressed to say much about that other than what people have said. So, and who's our last one again? We got
Sacco Horse Archer. Okay. Technically, the Immortal is a melee unit. Technically, I think that's how the game classifies it, but it has a ranged attack.
Got it. Okay, so with those guys all in mind, I mean, the Sacco Horse Archer is... I would say that these guys are almost tied. The reason I think I want to give it to the Sacco Horse Archer. I kind of want to compare these stats really quickly. I kind of want to give it to the Sacco Horse Archer because they have an extra point of movement. Let's see, their range strength is 25. Oh, these guys have extra range strength though. So I would say that, Sacco Horse Archer and Patati Archer could potentially, in my mind, be side by side. Now, the fact that Scythia can put out two Sacco Horse Archers for every one, let's see, their production cost is 50 for a Horse Archer, and it's 70 for Patati Archer. So I think that if you were to use these guys almost simultaneously, I think I would have to give the leg up to the Sacco Horse Archer because of the extra point of movement speed and the fact that they... their range strength is 5 points lower, but with Scythia would get two of them for every one, and they don't really require horses, so that's powerful. So if anything, I'm going to say Sacco Horse Archer slightly beats the Patati. I would rather play with the Patati Archer myself, especially due to them getting the bonus. The bonus combat for it, because that will continue on through your future archer classes. The Immortal, I'm going to put at the bottom because I haven't played with them much and I've heard such bad things from the community. And then what's our other one here? The
Marianu Chariot Archer, Egypt's.
Range strength of 35. That's a lot. Production cost is higher, though. Movement's only two. I think that they fit in where I left them, where I left that blank. So, Sacco Horse Archer at the top. Patati second, Marianu third, and then Immortal last, I think is my place.
You'll remember, actually, the Marianu, I haven't played it with the new patch, but you'll remember, and I'm looking at the Civ Wikia here, it mentions that in the summer update, they were buffed significantly. Their production cost was decreased from 140 to 120, combat strength increased from 23 to 25, and range strength increased from 33 to 35. Has a range of two, it has a high range strength. I like the Marianu Chariot Archer. I'm actually curious to see it in action post buff, but I think I'd probably share how you're ranking it. I'd share probably about the same. Yeah, Sacco, Patati, Marianu at third, and then Immortal. I mean, I like the Persians and I like the Immortal, but more in theory than in practice. My experience with them, they are pretty underwhelming, as people say, and they do feel, versus the other unique units that are in and around the age when they are at their peak, it is, pretty underwhelming unit.
Yeah, I mean, that buff to the Marianu Chariot, that's a great point, because, I mean, that is a pretty powerful buff there. I guess I'm just trying to consider what the Civ bonuses are that will continue to help them. I think that's what really gave the Sacco and the Patati the edge. And in that case, I mean, I think the Sacco Horse Archer and the Patati Archer are probably tied now that I'm putting thought into it. I just don't think that the Marianu Chariot can really get up there just because Egypt doesn't have enough complementary bonuses. But again, I am far from the final authority on this one. But you guys need to try out those Patati Archers. They are super, super fun. Now, I wish I had gotten the opportunity to build the Nubian Pyramid to see how much that really helped build districts. I did notice the change in the show notes, or in the patch notes for the summer. They increased district build times. I feel like I felt that a little bit. I was playing an online speed, so it was already fast, but it did seem like it was taking me a while to get any of those districts up. But I will say, once you get an encampment up with Patates, I mean, you're really just killing people left and right, really. So highly recommend.
Good. Okay. I'll paint you another picture then.
Please.
Maybe we can have this as part of a central kind of discussion then today. Without Wouter here, it feels like this is something Wouter would have good insight on, but we've talked a lot about tier lists and a lot about mm-hmm. where civs slot in. Our top tier being civs like, well, who do we talk about having in our top tier? Probably Germany, Australia.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's someone else I advocated for the Chinese, but I think we had Chinese in A tier. So, okay. So taking into account this whole idea of S tier being at the top, uh-huh. then A tier, B tier, C tier, and D tier. And remembering who we have in each of these tiers. I mean, I know that in the D tier, for instance, we talked about pre-buff Norway. We talked about Persia. C tier, we talked about France being in there, India and Japan, B tier, you know what I mean? So maybe try and slot them in a tier and slot them in and around a civ who you see them as having kind of equivalent a power to and equivalent kind of ability to win the game. And to wit, a second part of that, what do you think is the best victory condition for Nubia as insofar as you have seen?
Okay, you're probably going to have to give me some of these questions again, but I want to show, I found another tier list here that we're just going to use as kind of like frame of reference on this one. Okay, so, this seems familiar though. I think this is kind of close to what we used last time. This one puts in the God tier. I don't know if I agree with all these God tier ones. I wish I had that list handy that we used in the past just for frame of mind and reference, but
can you link
share.
It? In,
yeah.
Can you link it in Discord?
Yeah, absolutely. One sec, everybody. We're just doing some link sharing. Okay. There you go, Dan. You got the list now. So to recap for our viewers at home, what I'm showing on the screen for our live viewers is God tier. They have Scythia. We've got Brogamesh in there. We've got Rome. And we have Alexander the Great in there. So that's the God tier. I do agree with them putting Alexander in the top. He's been very, very powerful and people seem to like him. I believe Rome was up there in the past as well. And for as powerful as we just said that John Curtin and Germany were, I'm pretty sure Germany only got the B tier last time, the strong tier. Looking at this list, where I would slot in Nubia, I would say I would be maybe... my gut says to put them in the strong tier. I don't want to say that they're God tier just yet. I would need to play a little bit more with them to really get it. But I think that they're easily as powerful in feeling as Germany was. But I'm not sure how these bonuses are going to last throughout the game when archery gets a little de-emphasized in late game. That perk's going to go away. I mean, you can still use machine guns and such, but... I mean, how I tend not to use machine guns much due to their limited range. That being the case, I could see someone making a strong argument for them to fall down to an average tier, especially considering that their Nubian pyramids right now feel a little all over the place. Also, once you get those districts up and running, I don't think that that perk is not always going to help you, right? Like, once you get a lot of districts in your city, her Nubian pyramid bonus and her innate bonus that you get extra production towards districts, that's kind of going to de-emphasize in value.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, the one thing too that I would look at here is I don't really see any secondary victory condition that stands out to me. I mean, with a lot of these civs, their bonuses, whether it's offset by the leader bonus or the civ ability or whatever, you tend to have a secondary victory condition to go along with the chief one. Well, for me, Nubia clearly looks like a domination-focused civ. The Nubian pyramid does seem, to your point, to be kind of all over the place. So I don't know if it necessarily points you in any direction for a secondary victory condition. So to me, just to be clear, this list you linked me, I don't like this list.
Yeah.
I'm just going to come out and say, I don't like Rome being in a god tier. I don't like seeing Poland in like the below average tier. I disagree with this gentleman's list. I think it's cool to see other people's opinions and other people's lists and stuff, but this is pre-patch And this is a list I largely disagree with. If, however, I'm going by this list, since it's our frame of reference right now, I think that I would put Nubia in the average tier. I don't, like, I see in his average tier here, he has America, Arabia, England, Greece with Pericles, India, and Spain. I don't see Nubia as being as versatile as any of these civs, with the exception of maybe they're more versatile than India. Maybe, I don't know, but I don't see any secondary condition to lean into. So I have a hard time, you know, although their archers in their early game is very, very strong, and they've tried to offset it a little bit, the production bonuses. I don't know if I see them as, if you don't get a really good early game and start your domination play early, I think you're kind of toast. I'd be curious if you agree with that, because I look at his strong tier. I would rather play with Russia, Australia, Germany, anyone in his god tier. I don't think that Nubia is better than Japan. I'm not crazy on Japan. I also think that Nubia is a little better than Congo. But other than that, when I look at this tier, I see civs that I like more for their versatility and for your ability as a player to adjust your play style. I don't see an ability to adjust much of Nubia's play style beyond you have to really, really go hard in the early game for that domination play.
I can agree with that, and I can also agree that I don't love that list. So let's see. I found one of the other ones. I went back to our Twitter account. Now I also realize that we should probably get a bunch of these collected in one place, because we had like Yonker make a list and all kinds of cool stuff I just found that I forgot about.
Yeah, no, I love tier lists, man. I mean, I just love lists in general. It's a weird thing, but I think it's cool always to kind of compare, you know, Civ G to Civ R and see kind of where they sit against each other. But yeah, this is the one I think I was thinking about. This is the victory specific type. And when I look at domination victory specific, the S tier, which is the god tier for domination victories in this list, pre-patch, Aztecs, Alexander, Japan, Rome, Scythia, and Sumeria. And I would probably fit Nubia in and amongst those guys for a domination victory. I'd put them above the A tier of England, Germany, Norway, Persia, and Spain.
Wait, did you say Scythia gets Scythia? Or where's Nubia fall in that? I'm sorry.
In the S tier, in the top tier for me, in domination victories, yes. But in the other victory types, I don't see any other victory type where I'd put them anywhere but C or D tier. Maybe with religion you could put them C tier, but with like science and culture, all they really get to allow you to lean into that is the Nubian pyramid plus one bonus, which I guess aggregates a little better situationally. Right. But I don't know, man.
Okay, so first of all, I think I can agree with you in putting them into S tier for domination, looking at this better list here. Then I kind of want to say, and I think you're right, I think that they would probably fall in average in this category, but I don't think you would be bad to do it, is I do think that they could do a powerful or at least resilient science play, because, and it would depend on what difficulty you're going for, of course, but I really think that with their secure borders, due to their archer bonuses, so you can play strong defensive, and their ability to produce districts quickly in air quotes, you know, depends if you can get a Nubian pyramid, depends, you know, what you focus on in your empire. I think you could potentially then go for, I think you could really go for a strong science play with them, get your campuses up and running and really, really focus on that. At least it seemed to work for me. I was able to get a lot of commercial hubs going for Nubia, and that I was able to get a lot of great people from it. So if I had prioritized campus first, I think that would have worked out better. Also, with just how things were going in that game with online speed and such, I had a couple cities. I want to say I probably had four by the time I let go of the game for the night, and at least two of those cities had built themselves up very quickly. I think we were maybe at the point of having crossbowmen, but by that point, I had two cities that I could almost exclusively just focus on doing projects. So had I just set them to do scientific projects back to back, I don't know. I just really felt secure in my borders. Again, to your point, it doesn't mean that they have any special perk that makes them have a huge science bonus, but just that security and that extra production at the start, that stuff all seemed to help me get them to a point that I think I could put them on a science path and they would do well, if that makes
okay,
any sense.
Okay, that's fair enough. I guess my last question then regarding them, my last question to you regarding them, with your having played, I know you played them limited. You didn't go super, super in-depth on it, but that's okay. My last question is there anything that you can think of with them with regards to maybe buffing a bonus, buffing an attribute set or anything like that that you think would make them better?
Well, I mean, I really, and I've said this before, so I hope I'm not beating a dead horse with it, but I think that the, I want to pull this up, Nubia. I think that the Nubian pyramids could become a little bit more focused. If you see what I pull up here on the screen in a second, everybody, Nubian pyramids, depending on what they're next to, they get plus one to something. So if they're next to an industrial zone, it's production. Theater, square, culture. Gold if you're near a harbor or commercial district. Science if you're near campus. And food if you're near a city center. That is really cool. I kind of like it in that it gives you diversity. But at the same time, you are really spreading its perks thin, I think. Like, it doesn't really tend to focus on one thing in particular. Also, like I was saying, the bonus towards building, or the bonus towards, the production bonus towards districts is, in my opinion, going to be short-lived. If you're someone that's hugely expansionist, maybe you could argue and say that that's powerful throughout the game. If you're constantly building new cities and therefore new districts, fine. I could see that being a benefit to you. But if you're someone that only builds a couple cities and you don't really worry about pumping out those districts one after the other, after the other, after the other, if you're someone that plays that a little bit closer to the belt, I don't think that that's going to really help you for a long time. And the note of their military, I think that they're definitely set with the Patati Archer. I think that that is definitely fine to give them a strong military play for what it's worth. Did that kind of answer that? I don't know if I know them well enough to give a full comprehensive answer on that one.
No, that's fair. We've had a week or so with them, so I wouldn't expect you to. It's just sometimes, you know, that you get a feel when you're playing it that of something that it's missing or something that it could benefit from. And to me, when I look at it, I always like a sieve that I have a backup condition to lean on or to focus in. Now, theoretically, of course, every sieve can win with every victory type. I mean, you could go and win a Norway science victory if you want, I guess, in theory. I remember we had a Sivcast challenge a couple months ago that kind of emphasized that. But there are some where if you're playing a game where you are really challenging yourself and you really are pushing for a victory, under the most trying and difficult circumstances, you will lean into what they have a bonus in. And domination at high AI difficulties, I find domination and probably domination and science to be the two most difficult to me at high high difficulty levels to actually achieve. And so if you're doing a high difficulty domination play and you don't pump stuff out early and don't like conquer your first civ early or really snowball with a few city-state conquerings, I could see it as being a less than enjoyable game for you, I guess, with Nubia.
You know, and while we were talking, and I'm kind of staring at this picture on screen of Nubian pyramids, I have to say, I think maybe the biggest weakness, the thing that I noticed that I was lacking, I was going to say, well, I don't really have much encouragement to build these Nubian pyramids. That's not even so much the case as that I found them a little bit hard to build, specifically where I was spawned in the game. It just didn't really let me use them. So I think I only had the option to build one or two of them. So for as diverse as their perks are, they, I can't say I could use them that often because, you know, I just didn't have the land, the space, the building conditions for it. So it's a bit rough. It's a bit rough maybe that needs... I don't know. I don't want to say that they need to make it diverse. You can do it on all terrain because that's not the case. But I don't know. They just, it could have just been my single map spawn that just didn't work out well. But I just didn't really have much encouragement to build them. It didn't, when I put them down, they didn't feel that special. I think I got plus one food, plus one faith. And I was like, okay, whatever. Put a mine here. Something might be better.
Yeah, that's pretty negligible. And I get what you mean. You want your unique district to really allow you to lean into something like how the Stave Church does for Norway. Oh, having a bad domination game, that's okay. Maybe pump out some Stave Churches or the Mission with Spain or something to that effect. So, yeah, okay, cool. No, hey, man, good answers. I think that gives the people a pretty comprehensive rundown on your first playthrough with them. I mean, for me, when I finally get around to actually playing them or playing against them, I think I have a kind of a better idea now of exactly what to do. And that's rush Pitates and rush domination early on.
Definitely rush the Pitati archers. You will have a very good time doing that. You're going to have fun. You're going to be able to take out barbarians and everything quickly. And it'll even let you rush for some early game domination, like you were saying. So I highly suggest it. If I would say, in looking at the DLC civs, I have not played Poland extensively either, but I could easily say that I would find these guys, Nubias, maybe as valuable as, I would say they're about as valuable as probably Australia. So if you like the Australian pack of DLC, that's probably worth it. Overall, if you're someone that's on the fence looking to buy Nubia, definitely worth your money as a DLC. I'd say you're going to be happy with it.
Good stuff.
Okay, so we've Nubia'd to death. What else do we want to talk about here? We're almost at the time for your historical minute here, Dan. Was there anything we still had left in our show notes to cover? Where are they?
I don't think there's anything pressing. I think next week we talked about how we're going to pick Wouter's brain on where he thinks Nubia slots in with the tier list, because he is definitely more strategically inclined with the mind for that. Certainly more than I am. I'm more kind of the meta stuff when I'm looking at this. Plus, I didn't get a chance to play Nubia this week. But we'll circle back around to it next week.
I think that's a good plan. Hey, if anyone out there is looking to put together any more tier lists, I do want to start collecting these. That's going to be one of my little side projects, is to kind of link these all together. Because just a reminder, we've got, I think that the person who did this, did they make this one of these just for us? I think that they might have.
Yeah, I think so. We've had a couple.
So I'm looking here. We got, I think this one person is Aztuck. made a city state tier list by victory type, and I think they made it just for us, because they were the one that posted it and announced like why they had done it. And then I remember Yonker made us the nice grid for an Excel grid of all of the unique units. So Yonker, if you maybe want to update with a Pitati in there, let us know where you think that is. None of you guys don't have to do this, but we've had some changes over the past couple months. If you upgrade and update your list, we'd be more than happy to discuss it again. If you want to repost it on the subreddit and everything like that, we'd be happy to get into it. And then looking at this other one, I can't remember. This is just a direct link to this I think this was someone else's. The one that I showed up on screen, I think someone else made that through the general civ Reddit, so that wasn't necessarily made for us, but whatever. If you guys are looking to update these lists, we are more than happy to share. That being said, next week, again, reminder, if you want to tell us what part of the patch stood out most to you, if there was something, like I said earlier in the episode, if there was something that kind of broke the game or really changed your play style, one of those small tweaks that came down in those patch notes, let us know and share that in the episode description that'll be on the subreddit. Put it in the comments there. Let us know what you thought was really impactful. And we'll discuss that next week. Dan, do you want to go ahead and take it away with your minute for this week and let us know what's up?
It's a two-part minute. Part one has to do with the book and my historical extra. I'll be recording my part four of my Russian history historical extra this week, which I'll be getting out, which takes us into the Russian Revolution, which is, of course, one of the most tumultuous and interesting periods of Russian history. And the book that we're going to do for the book club this month probably has something to do with the Russian Revolution, Leninism, Stalinism, gulags, all that. You'll see when we get to it. But really briefly, my historical minute, like I think I mentioned to you, I don't remember if this was in the actual show or in the cold open, but I saw the movie Dunkirk last night, and thought it was really well done. In terms of, you know, the way that Christopher Nolan managed to capture the tension and drama and spectacle of wartime, and it really gets you, it makes you feel tense and makes you feel nervous and anxious the entire time it's happening. And that very much is what wartime is. It doesn't let you take a breath. I think that if we're looking at the one thing that I would probably be a little bit more critical of, it would be that it's not the most historically accurate movie in history. Now, historical accuracy in movies can be forgiven sometimes for being something that, you know, you sacrifice occasionally in the face of drama, in the face of tension, in the face of the magic of movie making. But I thought it would be important to mention that Dunkirk, the one thing it lacks is it really doesn't do a good job of representing the diversity of the British Army that was on the beaches of Dunkirk. It does a wonderful job of showcasing the terrible circumstances that British soldiers, English, Irish, Scottish, Welsh soldiers were under. But the one thing that it overlooks is that on those beaches were soldiers from all over the empire in Britain. There were soldiers for the British Expeditionary Force at Dunkirk that were from British Southeast Asia and from India. And there were soldiers that were from British holdings elsewhere who had been, not Canada or Australia per se, but the holdings where they could summon them to war. And that was, I guess, the one part I was a little bit more disappointed by in the movie, was that I felt the representation wasn't there. There's one scene at the start of the movie where the French forces are trying to get through to board the ships back to Dover from Dunkirk, and you see a few French African soldiers. But you don't see the diversity in the British Army that was present at Dunkirk. Now, I'm not saying, you sacrifice historicity completely just for the sake of diversity. But I do think that we need to, when we're watching movies like this, always be conscientious of what's being represented and whether or not it's fair and accurate to the armies present and to the men and women who were in harm's way and in many cases who sacrificed their lives for it. So, well, all in all and overall, a very well done movie, and it was a great movie. As a historical document, it was okay. There are some quibbles one can have with it, but if you're looking for a good wartime movie, it's certainly one of the best ones that I've seen come out in the last 10 years, going all the way back to probably the last best historical movie that I saw based around World War II. Was The Pianist, I think. So this, going back for me, is probably the best World War II one in a while. Just always be aware of some of these little representation things and the true historicity and authenticity of it, though, when you are watching it.
Very well said. Also to share, at the beginning of today's episode, Resender shared in the Mixer chat that one of his great uncles was on the beach, and he also gave a reminder there are also soldiers from Belgium and the Netherlands who fled with the British forces. That's really
absolutely
really an interesting tidbit there regarding your great uncle, Resender. Thanks for sharing.
That's very cool. And yeah, he's right. The Belgians and the Dutch were trying to flee as well because they had been conquered before that. And to be clear, the French did eventually get to evacuate, and the Dutch and the Belgians as well. But at first, it looked like the BEF was going to be the only group that was evacuated back to England. Fortunately, Churchill and the English saw better than that.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for all of your awesome contributions to the show here this week. I think we got a good episode in. Valter, we miss you, but Dan, it's always fun to kind of go back to our roots and have a one-on-one episode. I was saying to Dan off air, we are quickly approaching the 2-month mark. I said that wrong. We are 2 months away from approaching the 1-year mark for the show, 44 episodes later, and we started this right. So it happened right before, maybe it started even September. I know, Dan, you joined October 21st-ish when the game Civ 6 came out. But we're about to hit that 1-year mark. That is crazy. So thank you, everybody, for being here for the long haul of it. We really appreciate all your awesome feedback throughout the week. Feel bad we don't always get to comment on all the Reddit posts and such, but definitely read them and take the time, because you guys are taking the time, and that's really, really awesome. So, again, huge shout out to the people that are joining us live here, seeing a lot of new faces from people that have been joining me in the different live streams of other video games I've been playing, and all of our awesome returning people that are asking questions. Copper Cutters saw you in there, as well as Resender and Yohani. This awesome live stream is brought to you by the cool folks over at patreon.com that keep the show going. I want to kind of put this up there. We are really getting close to our new goal where I live stream some episodes of Civilization 4 and 3 maybe, and I don't know how far back I can go, but we're really, really getting close to that milestone. So if you guys are looking forward to those streams, feel free to head over and check it out. Valter on July 31st had his episode of the strategy session go up there. We're doing our cold opens, and Dan, I need to fix a little thumbnail on that, but Dan, your historical extra for July was up there. I guess you're going to have a historical extra for August coming soon as well, so people will get to go and check that out soon. What else do I have to tell you guys? Oh, you can always find the links to the show over at our website, KyleDebsterStudios.com. It's been flashing across the bottom bar there throughout. Go over there. You can find links to get the show on iTunes or Google Play, TuneIn, whatever you prefer. There's also all the links you'll need to find us on Twitch and YouTube and Mixer and all those good places. Also link there for Discord. If you're looking to join the Discord server, you can head over to CivCastPodcast.com/Discord. That'll give you a nice link to it. Hang out there, chat. Resender loves to post some things throughout the week. Post any of your Civ news, any photos, anything you want that's really relevant and fun. Get people chatting while we're not actually on here live streaming. As a huge reminder, we love all of our people over on Reddit, so go check that out. It is the subreddit is CivCast, so you can get there, civcast.reddit.com. Check out our friends over at nontoxicgaming.com. They're making a cool and friendly online community. You guys can find some other great Twitch streamers and YouTubers and such like that, some other podcasts. Dan, I think that about does it for this week. People can go check out the book club if they want to do that. That's also over on the Reddit. So until next week, just one more turn. You're listening to CivCast on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. For more shows like this, visit KyleDempsterStudios.com.